This is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Yaki on Liberalism, Part 1. I'd like to talk a bit about what Francis Parker Yaki had to say about liberalism. And before we get to what he had to say, I'd like to talk about why I think it's important to talk about what Yaki had to say about liberalism. First and foremost, it's been recommended to me. It was recommended to me years ago when I first started to dig into race and the Jews and liberalism. And somebody came along and said, hey, you should read what Yaki had to say about it. And I did. And I must have carried along some of that with me because it's familiar on this second reading more recently. And it isn't very similar at all to what I've been discovering and discussing about liberalism in the previous installments where I've been talking about it. He has his own unique take on it. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that Yaki was describing liberalism almost 70 years ago. And so that's the world in which he was. And it's a much different world than we live in today. Revelo Oliver, who really requires no introduction, although I'll probably speak about him also and his thoughts some future podcast, but Oliver liked Yaki, thought that Yaki's work was important. He wrote in 1966 an article titled The Shadow of Empire, Francis Parker Yaki After 20 Years. So in 66, he looked back at Yaki's work, Imperium, for which Yaki is best known, and from where this description of liberalism that I'm going to read from and comment on is taken from. But Oliver wrote in 1966 about the significance of Yaki. He said, just by way of introduction, that the great problem of history, he considered, is whether cataclysmic changes, and he provided as an example in his introduction how the British had conquered India with some 50,000 troops and had put down a rebellion of a quarter million Indian troops that they themselves had trained. And yet, within recent memory, had handed it all back to the Indians. And as we know, in the 70 years since, the 70 years that since Yaki was writing and the 50 years since Revelo Oliver was writing, that it's become much worse than that, that the Indians are now flooding into and colonizing Britain. But Oliver was just commenting on this incredible change, this 180 degree change between what the British had accomplished in conquering India and then handing it back. And he said that, you know, in his estimation, was the great problem of history, or the type of great problem of history, and wondered whether it was wrought by the weakness and folly of men or by blind and ineluctable forces of nature. So is the flaw in us, or is it some irresistible force of nature that causes these things to happen? Oliver describes the great modern philosopher of history that considered such problems of history to be Oswald Spengler. And he specifically cites the Spengler's book, The Decline of the West, which he says formulated the problem in terms so clear and so universal that everything written on the subject since 1918 when that book was published, has perforce had to be a commentary on Spengler, an attempt to extend, modify, or refute his magisterial synthesis. Now, Oliver describes Yaki as Spengler's disciple. He says that Francis Parker Yaki actually proudly proclaimed himself the disciple of the man, and he often referred to him simply as the philosopher, meaning Spengler. Now, about Yaki's book, Imperium, he says this is not a book for, quote, liberal intellectuals, unquote, or other children. No man can study history until he has learned that he must study it objectively and dispassionately without reference to his emotions or predilections. Whether you view Caesar with admiration or horror, whether you love or hate him, has nothing whatever to do with the fact that he was victorious at Pharsalus. No man should consider problems in historionomy. Now, historionomy, Oliver, I had clipped this part out, but I should describe here, is what Oliver describes as not only a study of history, but then the application of the lessons learned to the future to make predictions about how the future was going to be, or how the historian or the person engaging in this historionomy, of which Spengler and Yaki are examples, see the future unfolding in light of what they understand about the past and the patterns that they've identified in past history. Well, anyway, no man should consider problems in historionomy if he does not realize that the only question before him will be the accuracy of the diagnosis or prognosis. The validity of the analysis does not in the least depend on the reader's emotional reaction to the future that it portends. When a physician diagnoses diabetes or arterial sclerosis or cancer, the only question is whether he has observed the symptoms accurately and reasoned from them correctly. Our wish that the patient did not have the disease is utterly irrelevant. Infantile minds, accustomed to living almost entirely in the vaporous realm of their own imagination, are incapable of distinguishing between reality and their own fancies. This is why I counsel, quote, liberal intellectuals, unquote, not to read Imperium. If they are able to understand it, the book will certainly send them into a tantrum and may induce a paroxysm fit, paroxysmic fit. That's a word that's unfamiliar to me, but I would guess that just means spasms. They had better stay in their academic lecture halls or other playpens where they can be happy making mud pies, which they can call, quote, world peace, unquote, and about which they can dance in a circle chanting, higgledy piggledy, my fat hen, now we've got a big UN. I also hope that Imperium will not fall into the hands of tender-hearted conservatives who want to love everybody. Those dear ladies have noble souls, but they are much too good for this world. So in Oliver's opinion here, we already get a glimpse of what he thought of liberalism. He equated it to childishness, childish thinking, tantrums in response to the reality, when confronted by reality. And he also was critical, but more sympathetic with conservatism, identifying it as noble, Arian, but soft-headed, at least the variety that he saw himself surrounded by in the mid-1960s when he was writing this. Oliver also had criticism or concerns about Spengler and Yaki and Imperium. And one of the main concerns he titled in a section titled Pseudoscience. Spengler assumed such plasticity of human nature that he greatly underestimated and almost ignored the biological differences between human beings. Spengler was deceived by the pseudoscientific data forged or distorted by the school of Franz Boas. Franz Boas was the Jewish anthropologist who was working in the early 20th century, and his famous result was that he had measured skulls of immigrants to the United States and found that although their parents' skulls shapes had differed from the residents of the United States at that time, the average residents of the United States, that their children, their skulls were seemingly plastic and started to conform to the norms of the United States. And this was an amazing result, and a lot of people fell for it. It turned out to have been a fraud, that there was no such change, that skull measurements are an example of a physical trait that is inherited from the parents. And it doesn't just change because you move to a new country. But that was the argument that Boas wanted to make, is that, hey, you don't have to be concerned about all of these Eastern and Southern Europeans flooding into this country you Northern Europeans have founded, because it's okay. They'll change into people who look and act just like you. That was Boas's fraud. A little further on, Oliver continues, Spengler cites Boas with unjustified respect, and Yaki follows Spengler, though with some prudent reservations. Both try to refute genetics by citing examples of apparently total cultural assimilation. They do not see that these could be explained by phenomena they recognize elsewhere, the cultural passivity of the majority in all nations and cultures, and the tendency of isolated individuals to adapt themselves to the society in which they find themselves. It is true that Orientals in the West have conformed with apparent eagerness and sincerity to Occidental culture. It is also true that white men have a, quote, gone native, have, quote, gone native, unquote, among the American Indians and Polynesians. The one example proves no more than the other. Race ignored. Spengler virtually ignores race as a biological reality, and even uses the word, quote, race, unquote, in a non-biological sense to designate full participation in a culture. For Yaki, the question is less critical than for Spengler. Yaki is concerned primarily with showing that, quote, race differences between white men, which means Western men, is vanishingly small, unquote, in comparison with the gulfs that separate Western men from Negroes and Orientals. That no one can deny. So what he's getting at there, what Oliver is observing about Yaki, is that Yaki basically assumed that white people were all the same, racially speaking. He saw the continental racial differences between Africans and Europeans and Asians, but he thought that the differences amongst Westerners were insignificant, or vanishingly small, is the words that he used. And the reality is that biologically speaking, you can distinguish different genetic differences between even within Europe, within Europeans, and the genetics are so discriminatory that you can identify, you know, the difference between people who are from one town or the next town over, and so forth, at least if you examine, as Guest Worker mentioned in the interview I did with him last week, if you do studies that are based on identifying people whose four grandparents or more all come from the same area, then they can identify these patterns in the genetics themselves and distinguish people that accurately. But, you know, basically within to an approximation, Yaki was right that those differences between Europeans pale in comparison to the differences between Europeans and Africans, or between Europeans and Asians. And it should be said that Asians are closer to Europeans genetically than Africans are. Imperium contains a number of historical oversights and lapses, such as are inevitable when a man tries to generalize from a vast mass of complex details. Inevitable even when the author writes in a well-stocked library after decades of intensive study and meditation. Yaki, it must be remembered, was a young man of 31 by professional lawyer who wrote in a room of an isolated inn on the lonely shore of the Irish Sea north of St. George's Channel, wrote from memory in a fire of inspiration and while still feeling the moral revulsion caused by his participation in the early stages of the obscene farce that was enacted at Nuremberg to provide a hypocritical pretext for the lynchings that the United States carried out as a pawn of the international communist conspiracy. He capitalizes all three words there, the international communist conspiracy, by which he means the Jews. I shall merely list the three most conspicuous historical errors. Well, the only one of the three that I thought is relevant to this discussion of liberalism, and it isn't really even all that relevant to the discussion of liberalism because the Jews don't come into it, but Oliver mentions that Yaki essentially underestimates the Jewish problem, or at least the length of time that that problem has been a problem. When Yaki concluded that the Jewish, quote, race, unquote, in his non-biological sense of the word, was formed by the ghettos of medieval Europe, he probably did not know that the historical record extends over 25 centuries. There is no reason to suppose that the Jews who migrated to the medieval cities and established their ghettos aroused more resentment among the Christian populations than the Jews who settled on an island in the Nile near the first cataract aroused among the native European, native Egyptian population in the 5th century BC. Yaki's mistake, by the way, vitiates the parallel that he draws between the Jews in Europe and the Parsis in India, which isn't part of the reading on liberalism. So, as I say, this issue of the Jews, it concerns me because in evaluating someone like Yaki, I want to know what are his thoughts about race and what are his thoughts about the Jews. Oliver continues, such errors in detail do not invalidate the general thesis of Imperium. Yaki's analysis of the forces that are eroding our civilization is significantly supported by the fact that Lawrence R. Brown, who wrote when Imperium was almost unprocurable and seems never to have heard of it, reached substantially the same conclusions by an entirely different method in his learned and lucid work, The Might of the West, which was published in 1963. And in several distinct areas, the future that Yaki forecast in 1947 seems to be taking shape before our eyes today. Imperium is not a revelation of an ineluctable future, but it is a work that we must study and ponder if we would act intelligently in our time. And Oliver concludes by essentially saying that he does see great value despite these flaws in Yaki, or in Yaki's work. He sees great value in it. He says the great value of Imperium is that it forces us to reconsider our position realistically. And that was one of Oliver's main concerns. That's how he began in talking about how, as a physician, you need to diagnose the illness and not just wish that it you didn't have it. Your only concern is, what do you have? And diagnosing the problem properly. And I sympathize with that. I think along the same lines myself. So that's one of the reasons why I respect Oliver's opinion about Yaki. And since Oliver thought Yaki's ideas were worth paying attention to, that's why we're here paying attention to it. Beside the people more recently, several years ago, and in the past week or so, who have recommended that Yaki's writing on liberalism is worth reading. So this is part of the ongoing series that I've been doing, exploring what liberalism is. And as I've already said, I think that Yaki's ideas are somewhat orthogonal there, or complementary to the ideas that I've already discussed. And in places where they overlap or are at odds, or seemingly at odds, I'll try to comment on those, call attention to them. I think Yaki's idea of liberalism comes closer to what Guest Worker's idea of liberalism, when it became clear when we were talking in our recent interview about liberalism, and he said, what you mean by liberalism isn't what I mean by liberalism. And just, I think, hopefully without representing what he thinks, that his idea of liberalism was, as I say, like Yaki's, that it was this ineffable, irrepressible nature of Europeans coming through, and that that's what he called, or what he thought of as liberalism. Whereas I have been operating under the notion that liberalism is just what is the name assigned to the dominant philosophy of society. And that's why, for me, the main thing that I was trying to make sense of is why does this the things that are called liberalism seem to be so varied and at odds with each other, and even completely different from one period of time to another. This is a problem which Yaki doesn't even grapple with. He doesn't, in his mind, liberalism is this very fixed set of things, and he doesn't seem to pay any mind to the idea that it's changed over time. So that's one major difference I see between his description of it and my own so far. But in that sense, as something that arises out of the nature of Europeans and is just an expression of who we are, I think that's where Yaki's idea of liberalism has similarities to Guest Worker's idea, and probably is closer to what most people think of as liberalism. As I've said, I think part of the idea, part of the modern day fraud of liberalism is that Jews, especially, as I've talked about Lawrence Oster doing this during his lifetime, called things that were actually Jewish in nature, the current political regime, he identified as liberal, knowing that people assumed that liberalism meant something that springs from Europeans. And so he was basically assigning the blame for these negative things about liberalism that he called liberalism, and that was implicitly then assigning the responsibility and the blame for those things to Europeans. Now, the thing about our human nature, and the reason why this is an interesting point, is we can't really help our nature. It happens without us consciously trying to do it. And even if we try to go against our nature, we find ourselves going back to it with, you know, without a lot of effort to, and very strong consciousness of what we're doing to try and change what we're doing. It's hard to change our nature because it's inborn. It's genetic, as the difference between what we do by instinct versus what we do consciously by thinking about it. And the interesting thing here is, as Oliver said, the great problem of history is are these cataclysms that we, that our civilization, that our society suffers due to men or nature? And as we see, if we're talking about man's nature, it's really both at the same time. It's part of us, and that kind of neatly solves the problem, or answers the question anyway by saying the answer is both. It's both men and nature, and it's men's nature, our nature. But we can help ourselves. That's the other thing about this. That's the only reason that Yaki did what he did and wrote it down was because he was trying to change the future. He saw, and Oliver mentions that right at the end in his own conclusion, that it's not written in stone yet, the future, and we can still change it. And likewise, Oliver wrote and spoke and worked against what he thought our nature was creating, the future our nature was creating for it. And it's the same reason I do what I do. As I said toward the end of my discussion with a guest worker that the future doesn't look very bright for the white race, but if it's just something that you don't want to surrender to it. You want to keep fighting. You want to keep kicking. It just, that's part of our nature too, is just keep kicking. Not all of us feel that way, and I don't always feel that way, but obviously when you find the energy to produce a work like Yaki did with Imperium and the body of work that Revolo Oliver produced, it's because you do overcome the negative that you see, and you are trying to fight. So to do that, you have to believe in your heart that there is a way of changing our nature, that our nature can be overcome. And how do we do that? We do it by communicating with ourselves. And this is one of the advantages we have over animals. Animals don't communicate. They don't have written history, so they can't communicate with future generations, not only not amongst themselves so well, which actually you could argue that even though they don't have language, they do through sounds and other cues, chemicals or whatever, hormones, they can communicate at least in pack animal type ways, or schools of fish or so, to organize to do things in larger groups, but not to the same extent that human beings can. And as I say, what humans also have is history. We can pass it from generation to generation if we are careful to do so. And what we're trying to do is organize around common ideas, around these diagnoses and prognoses that Oliver mentioned about what has happened in the past, why did it happen, and what do we have to do to either prevent or to do it better in the future. So some background on Yaki. I'll link in the program post the page on Yaki from Metapedia, and which describes him as being best known for this Neo-Spenglerian book, Imperium. And it was, interestingly enough, it was published under a pen name, Ulik Varange. Although he wrote it in 1947, it wasn't published until 1948. He had some trouble publishing it. And on that page, you can read about the details of his, what's known about his life and about his book. There's another page for Imperium, the book, as well. There's an upcoming biography on Yaki. There was an article just recently at the Occidental Observer that Kerry Bolton is going to be working on a new book. He writes, Ted Salas, who's anticipating this, writes, many of Yaki's idea on biological race, this is his concern about Yaki, on science and scientific topics generally are not only ludicrous, but just plain wrong, objectively wrong. With respect to race, I suspect that the views of Yaki and Evola as well were negatively influenced by some of the racial theories popular before World War II and still extant today, particularly the American, quote-unquote, movement. In other words, I don't think Yaki had any problem with the major racial, for example, European, African, Asian distinctions. Instead, Yaki was likely troubled by the idea of a disjunctive subracial, Nordic, Alpine, Mediterranean, European subdivisions, that considered these putative subraces as almost different species with implications of superiority and inferiority. As a promoter of European unity, Yaki eagerly latched onto the absurd Boasian counter theories to invalidate what he saw as invidious and decisive distinctions amongst Europeans. So agreeing with Oliver there.